Hello and welcome to Discussing Documentaries with me, Matt Wills and Rick Wharton. Thank you for downloading this episode. This is The Jinx, The Lives and Deaths of Robert Durst. Right, this is part 3 of 6. This is The Gangster's Daughter. And this is hopefully part of the Patreon. So, Rick, I've just seen episode 3.
This episode is literally a part of our self-esteem. Let's see how it goes. Let's put it on the roulette table, see if zero comes in.
So on episode 2, I was pretty on it. But episode 3, I had to watch it 3 times, pretty much, in broken bits. So I'm not as sold on this episode. But saying that, I've done the Jack the Ripper thing. I've worked out who Jack the Ripper is. He's guilty. This fella is guilty. What? It's all in his eyes, right? So every time he asks a question, here's what he does. This is Robert Durst I'm talking about, obviously.
Yeah.
He, as I said on the last episode, he blinks intentionally, but I think it's to cover up the fact that when he lies, he blinks intentionally. So he's making sure, does that make sense? So he's doing it all, he's forcing it to happen. And then when he lies, it just looks normal.
I think it's kind of controlled reaction. So if he does something to a pattern.
Yes, it's exactly like, it. Yeah.
That's one of the things I love about this documentary. Like, my mother's terrible for this. If she knows something that you don't and she can catch you out with it, she will give you as much rope as humanly fucking possible.
Right.
And it's almost like a game to see how far you will lie before she will... Like, she could have that going shit for weeks, like, as a kid. Like,
really?
She would love to be... Just to know that she's got the answer at the end. Go, okay, then what happened? Just going to write that one down there. Now, is that what you say? What happened? Is it fair enough? And you're sticking with that. Okay. And then she'd bluff you at a later date.
So in an interview room, she'd go, okay, well, we're going to pause the tape there and have a little break. And then she'd let you sweat for a few hours and then come back and go, so, tell us about the night again, Rick. Yeah.
So I think, like, as people, we love working out of people's lying. If you see how many TVs, movies, anything, the documentaries, the most best bits of footage tend to be in the interrogation room.
Yes, yeah.
That room is drama, whether it's fiction, non-fiction, and the idea of picking apart whether someone's telling the truth is fascinating. And this interview, it kind of spreads across the series so far.
Yes.
And watching him...
Great interviewer.
I think it's great how he flips between being charismatic, you're like talking to him, and it's just like, and then you're like, oh, I did that. Because, like, to recap the last episode, when he turns around, he went, yeah, I told them I was at the neighbors just so they would just leave me alone. And you're like, what? So, like, you missed a disappointment, you just lied about what you were about. So, yeah, you know, you tell them this, and then they do that. And then it's almost like a sleight of hand, like a magician, he's away to another subject.
But it's only on this one because each episode's 40 minutes. So I'm sort of, I started this at like an hour 20 and this has obviously gone up to the second hour. And now I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know what's changed watching him, but there's a few things he said. And I'm like, okay, this dude's guilty. And I'll tell you the weird thing, you know, when the, you've mentioned, I didn't listen to a word you've said on the last 2 episodes, but you keep mentioning how good the music is.
Yeah.
You're right. It's very good. I only noticed that on this episode. And I've noticed why I don't notice it. It's because it's the wrong music. So when the HBO jingle stops, you know, it goes... I'm waiting for the Curb Your Enthusiasm music.
Yes, I think I do get a lot of Larry David feelings from...
Because of that I've Robert associated Durst. It. No, I've associated the HBO jingle with Curb Your Enthusiasm, because the first time I ever heard the jingle, I was watching Curb.
Right.
Like, see, I would have... Oh, what's this? Oh, this is... And that's why I haven't connected to the music. So this episode really connected to the music. It's cool, man. It's got like, a real nice vibe. It's got a Seattle vibe about it.
I was literally thinking Frasier. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Okay. we're spending way too much time together.
I was just thinking, how much would it change the tone of Frasier if you had that theme tune into it? Just him looking solemn in the radio booth, and you're like, he fucking did it. He did it. Look at the way he uses the right words in every situation. He's a fucking killer. Look
at him. Go Mavericks. Just be the,
it's that Simpsons thing. Listen to the music, Marge. Rowdy, rowdy people.
So, this one starts basically 18 years after Kathy Durst has gone missing, and basically Agras has given the old Bill some information. And
this, I forgot this little bit of info when I was watching it, and the guy's like, so this person is convicted for lewd conduct. He was exposing himself to women, and then in jail he went, by the way, I know who killed Robert Durst as well.
How does he know?
I think everyone knew. I think it was one of those things, like, it's like, do you know, like, because you don't know that that's true or that's false, but you know how there's like, there was a prevailing opinion, and because you have it's 50-50 split and everything, there's currently what one person believes and what one person doesn't. There is a episode we're probably going to do as a follow-up to American Murder, the Neighbors Next Door or whatever it was called, you know, the recent one where he killed the kids.
Yes.
Where they're, due to advertising, I have found groups where, like, no, Chris Watts didn't do it. It was the woman he was banging that did it all. And they are determined to fit her to the crime. It's fascinating. And there's even a medium who turned around and said, Shanann got in touch with him. So, you know, that guy's got the hard evidence right there.
You can just see that court case taking place, can't you? Oh, we're going to bring in our key witness now. It's this guy. He's spoken to her from the dead, and she's got this info.
Documentary. You know, I love court footage of the documentary. She starts going, yeah, where's the blonde woman? Oh, they're very fuzzy today. The spirit's very fuzzy. She's telling me that I should now watch The Tiger King. Okay.
We were going to bring in the great Randy to debunk him, but sadly, he's gone. What I didn't understand about the old Bill is, why would they trust the grass? Or, sorry, in other language, a telltale. Someone who had information. Why a snitch, that's the word I'm after. Why would they?
I know, you grew up in like, you know, the West End of London, where, like, as long as they're in a box, it's okay to hate them. Like, I mean, hate him for the fact he's, like, exposing himself to women, not the fact he's like, oh, yeah, Robert Durst killed him. Can I get some time off?
Like, but why would the old Bill trust what he's got to say? That's my point. I think it
was just a bridging the gap. Because you saw what was, like, what was it, West of Memphis?
Yeah.
When the guy said, oh, I was in the cell with him, and he said this. And the guy, like, hadn't said nothing. Just screwed them over as kids, and that's why they went to jail, basically.
But that's almost a trope, isn't it, in a movie, that they, you know, the guy told me to it in the cell. That's a Shawshank Redemption thing. You're like,
yeah, but that, I mean, it's not as if they went out and arrested Robert Durst at that point. This was a case that wasn't in, like, because they go and they check the South Salem house.
But on the back of what the grass said, though, that's all.
I think they'd reopened the case, and
I got it.
That was just
of,
another thing around the time.
Because of
the, I didn't know.
The grass is how I understood it.
Wow, can you imagine if this thing gets solved and it turns out it's because of a guy waving his dick at women and out of the car park? It's just like, of all the things, if you.
We're now going to have to speak to every sexual predator. What other crimes can they solve? It's going to be the worst weekly TV series ever.
You think you've killed your missus, you've dotted the I's, you've crossed the T's, you've got the alibis, then 30 years, Dirty Brian's there with his raincoat. I'm going, ha-da!
I've got these pictures. And then we met, so we get introduced very quickly to the, effectively, the star of this episode, the one it's named after. So the episode's called The Gangster's Daughter. And the gangster's daughter is a woman called Susan Berman. Now, her dad was a mob boss in Vegas. And she looks like Angelica Houston, right? From, do you know Angelica Houston, the actress? Pritz's Honor, John Wick, Part 3, Parabellum.
Yes.
right?
Yes, Pretty Zotto, you got me on that one, yeah.
So
I was going to say Roald Dahl's Witches. Is that the same one?
I think she's in that as well. Yeah, yeah. I think she's in Witches. Yeah, yeah. So she looks like her, and effectively, she's his best mate, right? So if he wanted to start a podcast out of Kill Your Missus, he'd probably get her in and go, come on, let's have a chat.
Tell you what, out of those two, I would not want to be arguing Podbean fucking shares between Robert Durst. Where's Robert Durst collect calling you to say that you can't do the episode?
How weird was that? He's got the weirdest connection.
Let Matthew pay for it. Let him pay for it. I don't even want to do the minimalists, you know? So it became a whole thing.
He's got the weirdest association with money, isn't he? So he's worth billions of dollars. Well, he's got it billions of dollars in his trust fund. Yet they've said, listen, someone collect called the office from this place called, what is it, Shipley Beach?
Ship bomb.
Ship bomb, thank you. And he went, really? Nothing to do with me. And and they're like,
yeah, there's only two people that ever dared collect call these people, and it was the owner and him being rebellious. Yeah.
And he went, why did you always collect call the office? And he went, I'm not going to pay for a call. They wanted me. He's one of those guys.
Yeah. It was one of those, it was like every little bit of defiance he could do it. No wonder he got passed over for a fucking Seymour's job.
Like, no, he calls his dad Seymour as well. He doesn't call his dad. He calls him Seymour. There's something wrong with that.
You got to sign a contract to be in the Durst family. I think that's legally binding. Dad, this discussion is over. If you want to chat with your dad, you talk to his lawyer first, then he'll get back to you in June.
Schedule a meeting in his Outlook diary. The Colin Quinn cop, so they go back to the cop after 18 years, and he goes, yeah, so there were some calls, some collect calls. Looked like Robert Durst got one over on us. Is that all you've got to say, Colin Quinn sounded like?
Because Susan Berman, as best friend, once, and she's from gangster family, the dad was known as the guy from Sing Sing that'll kill you with one arm behind his back.
Yeah, yeah, he was part of murdering.
Romanticized idea of the mafia. She becomes Robert's spokesperson and they start planting little nuggets of info in the press, like, oh, the doorman saw her at the apartment, which she never did. There was also a phone call made. That phone call was made, collect call, to the university to say she was ill and wouldn't be coming in for class that day. So that places her away from Robert. And, yeah, so... And she's basically his spokesperson with the press because she's a screenplay writer, she's a novelist, and she kind of like really liked that level of limelight and like protected them.
Yeah, well, they were mates, right? As he said, you know, we both lost our parent. He goes, I lost one parent, she lost both parents at quite a young age. And he gets asked a question. Did you have anything to do with the death of your wife? And this is when I started disbelieving him. Because he replied too quickly. I don't know that she's dead.
It's the same as his new missus going, well, that's a good question, isn't it?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it is that kind of lawyered up.
Yeah.
Okay, I am not going to slip. And yeah, he's trying too hard there. Goes, I'm unaware that she's dead.
It was so cleverly done. And the interviewer, so the interviewer is the director, isn't he? That's Andrew Jarecki. He then rephrases the question, and he's not missing a beat, this Andrew Jarecki. He's like, okay, all right. It's almost like he knows he's got the fish on the line, right? He's got the big marlin, and he's reeling it in slowly, and then it swims away a bit, and he's like, give it a bit more rope, reel it in, just keep reeling it in.
Do you know what I like? I really like the very clear distance between him and Robert during the interview. This is pre-COVID. There's like 7 feet of difference across the room and he's there for his file. Which is like, yeah, this old man's going to have to travel 9 feet to get the way of a fucking knife. I don't trust this guy.
That boom mic's going to come down, so I'm going to wrap it on his head before he gets to me. Yeah, he's quite a scary guy. So it was at the point where he denied doing the collect calls. Or reverse charges, as we'd say in Britain.
And then he turns around and he goes, come to think of it. It's the come to think of it when he's thought of a little thing just to place perfectly in there, because you don't remember daft facts like that.
No.
He knew that was a fact of the case and was went, what's the story? There was a person up there that was calling, not the regular receptionist, but a different one, periodically through that time. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Twitch, twitch.
And it was at that point I went, oh, mate, you're a liar, liar, pants on fire. That's who you are. This is not...
Also, in Ship Bottom is where they would, the mob bosses would chuck bodies because it's like thousands of acres of woodland area.
Yeah. And then what happens? Well, because Susan Burnham at this point, right, 18 years later, she's suddenly looking guilty. It's like she's played a part in a murder.
But now that they've reopened the case, they have got in touch with her. And not only that, in the press, they have said she is a person of interest the police are going to talk to. And 3 days later, Susan Burnham is found dead, shot in the back of the head.
Which apparently is traditional mafia-style hit. Apparently that's how they did it. They love their traditions,
Yeah, they've got Susan's cousins there. Like, they're part of the fucking mafia. Yeah. It wasn't like they're great. It's like me granddad flew a fucking Spitfire. I can't go, yeah, they normally wore hats. I know what I'm talking about. It's like, yeah, you've seen Goodfellas as well. All right, like...
And they're almost proud, aren't they? They go, yeah, it's traditional. Yep. Really? I like the fact that the mob have got traditions.
They also cooked pasta before they left.
They went to the mattresses. What that really meant. And also in her apartment, there was no forced entry. So they said, look, whoever killed her probably knew her. And she was just about to be interviewed about Kathy Durst going missing 18 years ago.
There was also a letter posted to the police with her address on it that just said the word cadaver.
Now, that's the weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the mafia don't send helpful notes to the police. That's not one of their traditions.
No. I mean,
I don't know a lot about the mafia. I mean, I know a few gangsters. I'm fairly sure they don't write notes.
Are they gangsters, though? Are those people in a pool hall that wear a keeper ring? And every time, although you've never seen them outside the pool hall, they just talk about fights they've had.
Giovanni, take a note if you would, sir.
Do you know gangsters, or have you just purchased cocaine before, Matthew? That's what I want to know.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
He's an organised crime. Why? Because he's someone you don't question. That's why. He is a level of aggression. This is organised criminals don't start fighting fucking Sainsbury's.
And then it keeps cutting back, doesn't it, to the interview. And Andrew Jarecki says, well, did you have anything to do with your friend Susan Derman's death? And he went, no. And he just says it too quick. And he's blinking. He's liar, liar, pants on fire. I'm telling you.
And it's just like, so why would you think that anyone... I don't know why someone would write the letter. And then it's the way he talks. Like, it's almost...
He's setting up why someone would write a letter. He spells it out.
He's like arguing with himself for doing it. He's just like, now you're taking this bit... And he's like gesticulating with his arms like, this big risk, you know? You know, one but the killer would know. But the best part is, in between that, they've got an act out of like a fucking Robert Durst lookalike posting the letter. And do you know how like there's footage of him walking around with the cast and crew of the documentary? You just imagine him looking at Jarecki with like squinted eyes while they're filming this bit. They're asking what kind of jacket you're wearing, we needed for wardrobe.
It was this episode. This is my turning point. This geezer's guilty. I don't know how. Now, I don't know if he killed Susan Burnham. I'm going to go with yes. Just because the way she was killed was just... It seemed brutal, right? And it was clearly, as they said, it was someone who knew her. He knew her. He's guilty. He's lying with intent. As he's blinking with intent. So,
You also meet Sareb Kaufman. Now, Sareb Kaufman, his dad started dating Susan when they were kids. And after 2 years, that relationship ended. But Susan was so awesome, the kids stayed with her. After the funeral, after Susan Burnham was found dead, although Robert was apparently in the area, Didn't go to the funeral.
That's weird, isn't it?
Which was a surprise because of one of his best friends.
Although saying that, I had a really good mate of mine. We were a little trio for a while. And he died. And the other guy in the trio, he didn't go to the funeral. No. Yeah, some people don't. They're not good at funerals.
Single gunshot to the head.
I've got an alibi. That's all you need to know, son. I've got an alibi.
This is how loyal Matt is as a friend, going, yeah, you know, he was going to talk to the police about the shit we did. But I don't think he would do it. Why? Bought me a bottle of wine once. Said he owned Notts County.
So here's the weird thing about Robert Durst. So he met up with her. Let's call him her adopted son, right?
Well, he called around all the friends, and the friends of Susan Berman, one of them says a thing which I detest. I absolutely didn't like the way she said it. It sounds like she's saying it for the documentary. She said she was working on something that, what was it, was going to blow the socks off something.
Yeah.
Hmm. Anyway,
it's almost that you're just dropping in an Easter egg right there, and it's not cool or clever at all in any way. Ask me more questions.
Yeah.
I'm really
She says
important.
To me, if I died tomorrow, would you look into my screenplay as the answer's there? Because basically they're trying to put together is a mob killing because of she's doing like work on movies which would give away secrets of, you know, these gangsters in the 60s, 70s. But then the letter from the cadaver letter.
She was incredibly unsuccessful.
Yeah.
I mean, incredibly.
Like, the house was depressing when you went in. And then you saw on a computer, you had a ledger of all the people that had given her money.
Yeah.
And you see Big Bobby Durst at the bottom of that list. Everyone's like a grand, 1900. Then Bobby Durst, 50. Yeah. There we go, 50 Gs.
But, and that's the thing. So he offered to pay for her adopted son's college tuition,
right? Wait a minute. Because they go through and her friends basically said it seemed like Bobby was trying to gleam information. It was like, oh, have the police spoken to you? What are they doing about this?
Yeah.
And then they try to have a word with Sarah because Sarah seemed to be living in a different reality is the word. But they said that, no, the last thing they said was Bobby, it seemed like he was trying to find allies. And it's one of those directorial things where it's just a slow cut in the pan to Sarah's head. And it's just a silent moment while you just in your mind piece together like, all right, Sarah, what did you get for your fucking blood money, mate? He's just like, did Bob ever give you money? Well, he didn't actually give me money, but it came up in conversation that I'd never been to university yet. And so he gave me 25 grand a year for 4 years.
Which is not bad, right? That's not bad going.
Do you see what Sarah looked like as a kid in the photos with Susan Berman?
No.
He looked like a young Charlie Sheen.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Well done. Like
The difference hair has on a bit. I've not been annoyed at being bald for a good 2 years until I saw what that kid used to look like. And I was like, God damn it.
Well, and the weird thing is he said, so did you meet Bob? And he goes, well, we were going to have dinner, but he went on the run for murder.
He'd skipped bail and was wanted for murder and dismemberment of a corpse.
Here's a question for you. So his bail was set at $250,000. He paid that the next day. He is then released and he jumps bail.
The way he tells this is brilliant. He's a raconteur, this guy. He goes, oh, and I was in jail for one night. They said bail set for $250,000. And I was just like, you can't let someone in jail for murder just get bail because they're just going to run. I was like, so that you had no intention of going back. Oh, goodbye, 250,000. Hello, freedom. Like, I just didn't need it.
So what happens to that bail money?
The police just keep it.
What do you mean they just keep it? For what? For letting him go?
I mean, there's an interesting John Oliver is what it was when they talk about search and seizure.
Right.
So in America, there's a thing called Search and Seizure. So just say you have a wayward son who's cooking crystal meth in your basement. The police can seize your house, keep it, and sell it themselves. And that is now money that the in particular precinct now has. So there's really? A whole thing. Yeah, yeah. Like if you get caught with drugs in your car, they can just impound your car. Do you see like they have like the police auctions of stuff from crimes? That's all search and seizure stuff, yeah. And there's like, what was it? Do you know, what would they call, like, not deposition hearings, but like committee hearings when the police are discussing what this is to like higher up officials. And they're like, so what happens with the, like, you know, returns from search and seizure? And the officer says, we more see this like pennies from God. Like, and he explained how they've now got a margarita machine in the staff room and stuff like that. And this is how, like, you know, with the 12 Galveston
kilos
police,
of coke.
Yeah. Because it just was that they wouldn't ideally be able to sell that. There's a whole CIA conspiracy on that shit, but that's up there. The QAnon idiots. But the idea of property, vehicles, stuff like that that can be searched, seized, and then auctioned off.
So it's a racket.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why people like targeted. So if you're like a young black dude who's, you know, might have a joint on him in the car, they'll just come fucking take the car off you, sell like you know, Mustang or whatever. Off.
And I guess if they knew Robert Durst's worth, so if they knew he was a trust fund kid with billions, they would have set his bail a lot higher, right? Because the idea of bail is so that you don't run, because like your mum would put up her house as collateral.
Again, this isn't like the LAPD, the NYPD. This is the fucking
Texas,
Galveston.
Yeah.
End of the line, smallest district, like thing. So there's not an infrastructure to deal with people like Robert Durst down there. They don't realize they're like £250,000. People show up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you see, your families put your houses up for grabs. But the whole search and seizure thing is that's how you see like police stations have their own tanks and military equipment. That's where all the money for that comes from. Like, you know, they've all got that RoboCop 2 shit rolling down the street.
I've just got this idea that the police, wherever it was, they've somehow seized and they've sold the DuPont Ranch. They've got Foxcatcher and they've sold it. Yeah, this is us now. These are our training grounds. It's lovely.
See, I don't think they get to do it to rich people.
Oh, it's only because
rich people can then afford to fight that shit in court, and that'll become a problem from the future. This is poor people problem.
This is our
problem.
Because
they're in legal fees.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Oh, that's good to know. And then it finished up. I found it finished really, really quickly.
Oh, just wait there a sec, because I think this is an in-betweeny episode.
Yes, I found this episode really weird.
Because over the next one kind of concludes what I would call the first half of it, and then the next two is the second half
that makes
of the documentary.
Sense. Yeah, all right.
Because I thought, like, the stuff that I was looking for to happen, I thought happened two episodes ago.
Yeah, okay.
So, they then show you the footage of him being caught when he shaved his head, shaved his eyebrows. And he's making jokes about shaving his eyebrows, like, you look weird without your eyebrows.
But he says, he goes, did you shave your eyebrows on purpose? And he says, well, you don't mistake. How do you mistakenly shave your eyebrows? Well, it's very easy, actually, Robert. You just need half a bottle of whiskey, go to cut your own hair, you slip a little bit, then you start tidying it up to correct the error. That's how you shave your own eyebrows, Robert. It's an easy mistake to do. We've all done it.
Know. Maybe you had a gig and you're insecure about your unibrow. I don't know. It could happen.
We've all shaved our eyebrows, man. It's all gone wrong.
Mach 3 growing through your face.
Why do you think women are drawing on eyebrows now? They just tried to do a little tidy up and it all went wrong.
So they show the footage of him stealing the sandwich, which makes him get caught when he's hopping bail.
It's a $6 sandwich.
$6 sandwich.
How much money has he got in his car? It was like $38,000, wasn't it?
Something like that. But I think in his mind, because he makes a joke of it and goes, because I wanted to. I think in his mind, standing there looking at someone in the eye as you pass the money, because you know he waits for his change, Mr. Collect Call.
Yeah.
He has a fucking... he's not paying 5p for a bag. He like, And he doesn't want someone, because you've seen in the movies, every movie, how many times you've seen the trope, a guy buys petrol and in the back there's the fucking police thing going, if you anywhere you see this man, blah, 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 call this number.
Yeah.
So I think he's got that in his mind. Maybe he's in the supermarket, there's newspapers up with his face there, and then he's decided to steal it. But this is what makes me laugh. So he steals it, he goes outside, and then the security guards go, very sorry, sir, you have to come back in. Now, when I did, when I worked at the phone section of Sainsbury's during a particular fucking majestical part of my life, I could not have been happier. There was nothing like going around the fucking warehouse and being like, is that a SWAT sticker tattoo on the back of the gentleman's head? Hope I don't need to talk to him. But they have all these videos about how you act as a Sainsbury's employee. They take it super, super seriously on little things. One of the things people don't know about Sainsbury's is you are trained never to chase shoplifters.
Why?
Because if you live close to that Sainsbury's, chances are, if you don't get caught stealing, you're going to come back in and buy more stuff than you stole.
Really?
Where if they chase you out for nicking a Snickers, they've just lost a fucking weekly shop eventually from you. So that... if you get out the door... Like, if literally someone hasn't got their hand on you, like, and that's that security guard's personal opinion to do it, they are told not to fucking chase you, just to pretend like you're not doing it.
I met a shoplifter once. He cleared 80 grand a year plus. It's really hard work. He's had a 9-to-5 job. It was harder than a 9-to-5 job, he said.
It's Carlito's way. Fuck your streets, fuck the code. Your whole world is this big and it's got one rule. You save your own fucking ass.
Gail! That's all I know about Carlito's way.
It's got one of my favourite quotes in Carlito's way. It's, you think you like me? You ain't like me, motherfucker.
It's Sean Penn, isn't it? Sean Penn plays the Jewish fella.
Yeah, Sean Penn plays the angry lawyer.
Yeah. Right, so why does he get... I think he gets arrested. I think he gets arrested because he wants to get arrested.
I think he was stoned off his fucking box and overthought. Because that's one of the things. He's always got weed with him, as Robert Durst. There's always fucking weed with him. And I think he was absolutely baked. He needed a sandwich. Like, oh, no, the woman in the cashier thing will recognize us. I'll nick off with it.
Okay. Yeah, mate.
I think he was stoned.
I was stoned for years. I've never shoplifted.
Yeah, but you were never on the run for fucking more, 2 minutes.
There is that. Yes, there is that. And also, as you're queuing, that's where all the good sweets are. And if you're stoned, that's where you want to be.
They've already got one of those birthday cake protein bars we got addicted to.
And then basically the episode... It just ends.
Because this is a very much a bridging one. Yeah, this is a bridging episode. 4 it picks up, five mint 6.
Okay.
That's the way I would say this goes.
But I'm gonna press stop on this recording then. I'm going to go watch episode 4.
All right, so what are you enjoying it so far? And I know there's been a long, long process.
So I'm going to go and watch episode 4 now, and then we'll record episode 4 tomorrow.
Mint.
Just, I'm keen. I'm genuinely... Because I watched it about 4 hours ago. So I'm like, okay.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.